This is episode 1A of Free as in Freedom for Tuesday, October 11th, 2011. Hi, I'm Karen Sandler.
And I'm Bradley Kuhn.
This is Free as in Freedom.
And so as we're recording this, the blog post I said I was going to write by the time the other show came out, I haven't finished yet.
Which blog post? Oh, so you did what I did the time before.
Pretty much. But but now it has to be out by the time this one. It must be. Because at that point,
which I can't. Which blog post was it?
So I was going to write about my year at Conservancy and write about all the stuff Conservancy's, or not all the stuff, but many things Conservancy has done this year. And I'm busy trying to do things for Conservancy for next year, and then like I didn't write about last year, and now it's last year's
stipping. I find I'm just constantly underwater.
Yeah,
and it's hard. It's like, you know, it takes a long time to write these things up. So I'm trying to write a report every 2 weeks of what I'm working on, and I've been doing it. But I find that it takes so long just to remember, you know, just to sort of write it up.
Well, and we're also definitely not on IRC chatting with each other, and we should be working, because I haven't even talked to you since the last episode, basically.
Yeah, not at all, actually.
yeah, it's the first time we've seen each other in 2 weeks since the last episode. So this is your window into what it's like to be an executive director of a nonprofit, because now you have a show hosted by two executive directors of nonprofits.
We did have sort of a little bit of time, like a half hour or so of catching up right when we saw each other, and it was just like this whirlwind of discussions about all the things that we have going on. It's kind of amazing.
Yeah, I remember what this was like at FSF when I was the executive director of FSF from 2000 to 2005, and it's a familiar thing, and not all of it's good. It's very stressful, but we do this because we care. We care about the future of software freedom.
We do this because we care.
And we want to make, I want to make all Conservancy's projects succeed. You want to make GNOME succeed.
If we didn't care, we could, for example, go work at Apple.
Go work at Apple. That would be evil.
I'm only mentioning
I'm not supposed to say evil, right?
I know. And yeah, I bet we have some listeners that work at Apple.
I doubt it.
I bet we do have one or two.
If you're a listener at Apple, email me just so I so you can prove me wrong, but I don't think you exist.
Huh.
Who would work for Apple and listen to this show?
I know plenty of people who would listen to this show who would probably unfortunately jump at the chance to work at Apple.
Really?
Yeah.
If you're thinking about going to work for Apple, don't. Even though I hear there's a job opening. Which I think has already been filled because Steve Jobs stepped down before.
Yeah, so we did actually. So one of the things that happened during our half hour of catching up was that we just talked about a lot of things, and we just started talking about the fact that Steve Jobs has died, and it actually turned into the beginnings of a very interesting conversation. So we just stopped and decided we would talk about it here.
So I think that so there is some discussion on Identica already that I saw, and pretty much the only discussion I saw in free software about people wanting to mourn and so forth, and I was staying mostly silent on it until I actually walked home and I listened to every day the little news.
And actually, let me handle this for just 1 second. Sure. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I should say that we are sorry for the family of Steve Jobs. Like, you said that you should allow people to mourn, and we should actually start out by saying, you know, that our condolences to anyone who was close to Steve Jobs.
Yeah, I don't know any of them.
I don't either, but when you talk about someone who has just died, like, for example, talking about the Nobel Prize winner who died suddenly, I feel like it's important. Anyway,
I understand.
Carry on.
I was listening to the little NPR news summary, which is like a 4 minute podcast. It's actually a podcast, not an Ogcast, because I have to convert it to Og. That summarized the news of the day, and I was listening to it. I actually am always a day behind because I listen to the morning one in the afternoon, or 12 hours behind. And so it was just the announcement that he had died, what do you call those things they put in papers?
Obituary.
They were giving an audio obituary, and they said, considered by many the Thomas Edison of his era. And that's actually what made me decide I wanted to say something about this in some sense, because most people know who listen to this show that I'm not a fan of Thomas Edison. He more or less invented the modern patent system and particularly the idea that companies should control the patents of their employees. I mean, Edison would basically revolutionized companies filing for patents by having all his employees assign the patents to the Edison's various companies rather than keep the invention themselves, which traditionally, before Edison, an inventor invented something as an individual and then started a company around his invention. Now it was people working for companies assigning it to that, and that's just a horrible outcome. And so I think Edison was bad for the advancement of technology for that reason. So when I heard Steve Jobs compared to Edison, I was like, yes, that's right, but I'm also I have a real problem with what Edison did as well. And so even though Steve Jobs has just recently died, it's no different than Thomas Edison being dead. It's this point where, as I think you were saying to me before the show, Karen, that this is a point where we can talk about the entire life story of the person.
Yeah, so what I was going to say is that, you know, we want people, you know, people should be allowed to mourn. And, you know, I think a lot of people feel differently about it. But at the, you know, when somebody does die, it's a time that you can look, the story of that person's life has finished. And so it's a time you can sort of look at it as a whole. And I think it's perfectly natural to do that. I don't think there's anything morbid or inappropriate about that. People are public figures. And especially people who strive to be in the public light, they're looking for this kind of attention for their lives and for after their lives.
And if those people who work at Apple, I will tell you that when I die, if you want to say that it was an evil person because I supported this idea of software freedom and it's good that I'm dead, you can say that. Good that I'm dead, you can say that about me if you want. So you have my permission. But because I don't care, personally, I don't care what people say about me after I'm dead, except for to the point to which it helps free software as a cause or something like that. So if you don't support free software as a cause and want to say bad things about me after I'm dead, then you have my permission, certainly, on the day I die.
Well, it will upset me if people say that you were evil.
Well, if people are against free software, of course they think I'm a horrible person, right? So Apple is against free software, and that's sort of the point, is that there's this sense that Apple innovated and that Steve Jobs was this engine of innovation.
Paula Rooney wrote an article on ZDNet where she, what did she say? I should pull it up.
I thought we were going to have a second segment. Okay, we'll get right into this.
Second segment. Okay, that's a little preview. Carry on.
Okay. So for my personal opinion about this, I thought we'd give our personal opinions, then we could talk about what other people are saying. It's a structure.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Okay. Great. So my personal opinion is basically Steve Jobs was not a positive force for the advancement of technology because he was obsessed with keeping technology locked up. And I think that it is bad when technology is locked up in that way and people can't learn from their devices. And when you look at the trajectory of his life and you look at the people that he worked with initially, somebody like Steve Wozniak, who is basically a hacker, who basically is the type of person who will sit down and learn how computers work. And when they got the first machines, he's the one who figured out how to get the bootloader working on them for the first Apples by hacking around with the machines out of the box. Those type of people invented these things, and Steve Jobs was an expert at locking that down, putting that under control, under tight control, and basically turning it in from enjoyable technology into cookie cutter consumer product.
Well, you know, I'm sympathetic to the other view here, even though I agree that Apple's model of locking down is inappropriate, and it caused me early on to stop purchasing things from them. I mean, not that early on, but you know, in my adult life. I agree with you on that, but on the other hand, I do think that the reason why there's such an outpouring of sentiment over the death of Steve Jobs is because Apple really, that whole model of linking the software with the hardware and taking away choices from people is what made the technology more accessible to a lot of people who wouldn't have otherwise. They're not developers. They're not people who would have been developers. I'm saying this because
it's accessible to whom? People who have $400 to burn for a phone? I mean, okay. That's not accessible technology in my view.
Usable. I mean, okay. So I'm going to tell you a story about me personally, which you may have heard before. But when I started Columbia Law School, I went to a cocktail party. And it was a cocktail party of faculty. So basically, the law school for the incoming class organized a few cocktail parties, and they invited like a portion of the class and a few faculty members to have this like mingling thing, and I think maybe even a few alumni. And I was talking to a bunch of people, and this woman said, I don't even remember if I befriended her or not, but one woman who was at the party said, you know, my nephew is a, you know, my nephew is going to be so much better at computers than any of us here, because he's growing up with this. He's going to be, I mean, imagine how, you know, just because he's a kid now, how much better, you know, he already knows how to do, you know, use a computer, use Windows or whatever. Imagine how much, and I jumped at her and I said, that's not true. Actually, we are much better off because we grew up with DOS. We grew up with file, you know, with operating systems where we had to actually understand file structures and understand some basic things. Our computer games were within reach. We knew, you know, our guy would maybe, you know, there were glitches you could see, and it was very simple. They weren't so, graphics heavy. And in fact, the computers that we grew up with are, you know, didn't have this layer of pictures that separate us from our computer. And therefore, kids today are going to be better users of whatever it is that we create, but they are going to be worse at understanding computers. And
what did she say?
And I said, well, there wasn't really time, because so then I was like really on a rant. And I said, and what Windows and what, you know, what these, you know, what Windows and Macs have done is that they have made our computers for, you know, they basically have made them for old people today instead of, you know, instead of young people tomorrow. And I didn't get very far because Eben Moglen happened to be at that cocktail party, and he happened to be standing behind that woman, and he whirled around and he said, who are you? And that's how I met Eben, and that's how I wound up ultimately, you know, getting involved with, I think.
So ultimately, what you're saying is you agree with me.
So basically, Apple started out that way. But now, fast forward all these years, and I've had all this experience with seeing people who were terrified of computers become comfortable with computers because of their Macs. I often use my mother as an example. I think she's starting to hate it, but she was terrified. She wouldn't, you know, I kept trying to come at things that I thought she would be interested in. You know, you could keep your recipes on the computer. I typed a bunch of them in, you know, like I was writing little programs for her. So I thought it would be really cool. I kept thinking of different ways to try to draw her in. And it wasn't until she got a Mac or saw a Mac that she thought she could use computers, that it was something that was for her. And a lot of other people who weren't older, you know, felt that way about their Macs. And having seen that, I now understand how important our user interface is. And I think actually that Apple paved the way for GNOME 3. Because while I think what GNOME 3 does is different than what Apple is doing, the idea that you can just, that there should be a sleek interface for your computer is so essential and is something that we need for new users and for ordinary users. So I think Mac actually, I think Apple, Steve Jobs actually paved the way for GNOME 3. And so I agree with that basic proposition. Well, that was long-winded, sorry.
Okay, but so I'll ignore the fact that you basically told me I have the emotional maturity of somebody just out of college.
What?
Because you said I have the same position that you had when you were just out of college.
No, what I'm saying is that I used to believe as yeah. As you did, but also I computed.
When you were young and
well,
foolish.
But I computed more like you do now then. Like I don't, you use very minimal user interface.
I have a very rich user interface. I don't use a graphical user interface because
right.
Graphics slow down.
Right, and I actually have come around on on my adult work.
Like if you're a kid, you need a lot of graphics because most of what you do is draw with crayons and so forth. But when you are grown up, you don't use crayons.
But for people who aren't as savvy as us,
giving them crayons is what we should do.
But it's not giving them crayons. It's giving them. I'm gonna try to think. Carry on. I'm gonna think of an example.
So
I'm bad at that. I need Dan Ravisher.
That'll just be a sports analogy. So Don't make a sports analogy.
So, I was just watching baseball the other day.
So it's like we have Dan Ravisher on the show. You're going to make a sports analogy.
It is so much more enjoyable for me to watch the to watch a baseball game where I can see graphics that show, you know, where the strike zone is when there's a pitch made. There are proper words for this, and I'm revealing the fact that I don't know much about baseball. But you know, having that, it's not really an interface, but having those, that enhanced presentation makes it a lot easier for me to understand baseball.
Well, so, okay. So my point is that I'm not against graphical user interfaces for users that want them. I sort of agree with RMS about this, that the we should have any software that users want to use, and it should be free software. And whatever it is, we should make it. I think that what actually has happened is that we've been forced to create something like an M3, which we need. I agree with that completely, because Apple created a lot of proprietary stuff that users wanted, and we had to answer that. So it's sort of, I actually see GNOME 3, even though people say it's so different than other interfaces, it was sort of necessary for free software to make a radical new desktop mm-hmm. user interface that works in exciting ways for users, because Apple made a desktop interface that was exciting to use, but it was completely proprietary and locked down. So it's really just the same situation next day, where we again have to answer what proprietary software did. And if proprietary software would stop trying to one-up freedom and say, let's take people's freedom away. RMS also says this in his speeches, which I've always liked, where he says, it's not like proprietary software isn't enticing. It's not like it's horrible or in that sense. In fact, it's always enticing, because there's always some goodie that you're going to get. If you just agree to this proprietary license, you're going to get something that looks really good and works really well and you like, initially at least. And then you're going to find out you have to give up all your freedoms to get that one little piece. You get that little piece and discover you can do nothing else because you're trapped. That's the way they trap you. It's holding out the really tasty looking cupcake when in fact the rest of the buffet is rotting food, you know? And so I think that's what Apple's done, and GNOME's answering, which is great. And I to that extent, I agree with you. It paved the way for GNOME 3, because it said, we've got to do something exciting and new on the desktop, because GNOME 2 looks like computers did in 1999. And that, uh-huh. I think, is true. And GNOME 3 looks like computers look now, and that's why it's great. But it doesn't mean that Apple was great. It means that GNOME was great.
It looks like the way computers will look.
And that's even better, right? Because it's always better to be ahead. And that's, in fact, I made right. this point about free software programming languages, that Python and Perl, for example, were free software languages that innovated programming language.
Right. And I agree with you. I think Apple's lockdown was the biggest problem. And I think that what makes GNOME and all free software different is that inherently that's not the case. And I mean, for example, GNOME is now just starting to work on 3.4. And it's, you know, anyone can sign up to, to the developer announce list or developer discuss list and chime in with what they think the features that should be incorporated into 3.4 are.
But don't propose a survey.
But I mean, all these discussions are being held out in the open.
Yeah.
And that's
that was an insider joke for the GNOME crowd.
In any event, I think surveys can be useful. I was just telling you to do one in another context, not for GNOME.
For a conservancy project.
Not for GNOME, everybody.
You have recommended a survey for a conservancy project, which I agreed was a good recommendation, and we will recommend it to our conservancy project who might benefit from a survey.
So I agree with you that, I agree with you that that Apple
They created made a its problem mark. That GNOME 3 had to solve. That's how I see it. Apple but created the problem, GNOME 3 is the
and
solution.
And I wouldn't disagree with that. But what I'm saying is that, and actually, I'd say also Windows, Microsoft also caused the problem.
Well, actually, GNOME 2 was solving the problem Microsoft created. GNOME 3 is solving the problem Apple created.
But I'm just saying that I think it's a little bit more nuanced than that. Like, when we evaluate historically Apple's influence...
Like Thomas Edison. History is written by the winners, and Thomas Edison won and changed the patent system and decided to teach knowledge, treat knowledge workers badly by making them give up all their knowledge to the company. So will Steve Jobs. History, because history is written by the rich, will be written as he did great things for humanity. And I don't think it's true. I think philanthropically he gave some of the money away, I assume. I don't actually know that, but I assume he gave some money away, probably not as much as Bill Gates.
I think some of the impact of the Apple approach, which was very different, you know, of having, you know, really attractive looking hardware that had software that really worked on it. And the idea that even savvy users might not want choices all of the time.
Yeah.
You know, I think those were really groundbreaking. I don't want to recommend Apple. And, you know, I think the problems are their problems. I'm just saying that I think it's a little bit more nuanced than that. And to deny that positive impact, you know, is just not being honest.
I'm reminded of Cat in Red Dwarf and his obsession with shiny things. I mean, in the end, shiny things are not that important. And that's what I see Apple products are, is they're just shiny things. And that's the only value they have.
Somebody who I don't know if he'd want to be identified as saying this, so I won't identify him, said, and someone that we both deeply respect, said, at heart, we're all monkeys, and we like to touch things. And, you know, we like to touch things and play with them. And the more things that are easy to use, you know, basically he was talking about how, you know, many people have been talking about how tablets, they think tablets are the future. And it's just this thing, like we're basically hardwired to respond to good visuals and, you know, great interfaces.
Don't try to take my shiny thing. You can't have my shiny thing. It's my shiny thing. I found it. Okay, in the next segment, we'll talk about what other people are saying and our response to it, I suppose. Mm-hmm. So this article you want to talk about, who wrote this article? What is this thing? Why do I care?
Oh, it's Paula Rooney, and she wrote an article. It was just, you know... one of the articles that
so ZDNet's a link baiting so-called news website is saying,
well, they recently covered my medical devices stuff, so I'm
well, there is that but Steve Jobs an open source pioneer ? You bet. I bet that he's not. Yes. And she goes on to just argue here that basically because he adopted permissively licensed stuff, and one time they threw a project over the wall.
Well, I think that the important part of the article, or the key of it, is the Steve Jobs' early use of BSD and development of Darwin were key endorsements of the open source project concept and the open source development model that tilted public and programmers' opinion in favor of open source.
Right. Okay, first of all, this woman doesn't understand how years work, because she says early to talk about something that happened in basically 2003. That doesn't make much sense to me, given the free software movement started in 1984. So how is he an early adopter?
About Darwin.
Darwin is in 2003. We're talking about 2003. First released in 89.
Well, that's what... apparently how Wikipedia describes Darwin.
That's not real. Well, okay.
Darwin's
so,
heritage began with Next Step operating system, first released in 1990.
Right, so it's saying Next was released then, and Next was proprietary. In fact, Steve Jobs was the first GPL violator, as I said in my talk.
Oh, I see.
Right? So the point was, Next was all about proprietary technology and doing everything proprietary. They rewrote most of Next based on BSD in the early 2000s when they wanted to launch the new Mac after Steve Jobs went back to Apple. So he is a person who understands the difference between copyleft and non-copyleft. I would agree with her if she were to say he was the first to really figure out that if you want to exploit people, avoid copylefted software, because Steve knew that very well. And he avoided, once he ran into the thing with Objective-C, which I talked about, I think, two shows ago in my talk, he avoided it from then on and only used permissively licensed stuff. So, yes, he was the first to figure out that if you take and give nothing back to the community, you can be very successful at basically taking from free software and never giving back.
Well, and that's the impression that I had gotten from, you know, the whole Darwin thing. So I was kind of surprised to see... that part of the article.
They threw parts of it over the wall. It was thrown over in parts. It was actually very similar to what happened to the BSD after the AT&T lawsuit. There was parts that didn't really work that were released that people tried to get working, and there were a lot of free software projects that have attempted to make use of that stuff and have been challenged trying to make use of it. And her argument in the article is that, well, they never got adoption or something. It's like you give somebody something that doesn't even work, and you say, we released a bunch of code. It doesn't really work. We threw it over the wall. There you go. I don't think that that's actually engaging in free software development in any stretch or adopting it.
Yeah, I would agree with. I mean, I was surprised to see that article.
It's a link baiting article because they cover the open source beat, and the only way to get links at the time we're recording this, the end of last week for everybody else, was to talk about Steve Jobs, and so that's why they did it. Because if you search news, lots of people searching Google News for Steve Jobs. I mean, the whole, you know how I feel about the tech press. So anyway, so I think there's nothing wrong with taking a look at this point at Steve Jobs' life and saying this person is akin to Thomas Edison in my view. I think that that's actually a correct analogy, and I don't think Thomas Edison is somebody we should be holding up as a great innovator of technology. He was a great business person who was very good at doing what business people do, which is making money for themselves.
I think that he can be held up as a good businessman, but also I do think, as I said before, that you know Apple had some positive impact that we in free software can build on and learn from.
No, I don't think they had a positive impact. They created additional problems that free software is getting good at solving. So, and to that extent, I think I might agree with you, right? When you present somebody with a challenge and they step up to that challenge, there's an incentive to step up to that challenge. There's an incentive to do work. I think when the Apple, the switch, and the giant sucking sound of users from GNU Linux to Macs during the mid 2000s, that was a challenge to people like the GNOME developers, and they answered that challenge well to doing GNOME 3.
I mean, it's still a challenge. I mean, it's amazing to me when you go to a LinuxCon and see all of the Macs in the audience. It's just amazing. So, I mean, I think it's still a challenge. I mean, I think, you know, GNOME 3 speaks to that problem, but we're certainly not there yet. We haven't, you know, gotten all of those users back.
Yeah, well, that's
and I don't know
a
that,
lifetime thing. I mean, yeah, and that's and I when, know when that I, if we're going to talk about death, because we're talking about somebody's death on this episode. I a long time ago realized that I'm going to die in a world where there's still proprietary software. I was naive enough once to think
I will probably die with proprietary software in my body.
I know that's horrible. but I came to the conclusion that at one point I thought, oh, free software will succeed in my lifetime. We'll have universal software freedom. Well, we're not going to have that in my lifetime, certainly. So from my point of view, that's always true. We're always trying to answer the influx of proprietary software. And I hate the military analogy, but it's kind of a ground war, right? It's always the battle of the bulge in free software over and over again. There's always, the people who make proprietary stuff will make inroads, and there will be, a lot of people adopting that proprietary technology. And then we in the free software world have to catch up. And people complain about free software always trying to catch up. Proprietary software basically has a 20-year head start on us. Proprietary software started about 20 years before the free software movement. So they're always going to have a 20-year head start. 20 years matters less once we get to 150 years. So that's what I think actually the success, if I could take bets for longer than my lifetime, I might bet the under on 150, maybe. Mm. But it's certainly going to take at least that long.
I just think that the problems are more complicated than you present them sometimes. I mean,
The problem is simple, though. It's proprietary software.
I agree
taking
with
away
you,
freedom
not,
from users.
It's not simply a matter of proprietary software having a 20-year head start.
Oh, that I agree with. I think that that's because we have wily opponents like Steve Jobs who are thinking really hard about how to take away freedom from users. And if you have people who are smart, and I agree that Steve Jobs was a smart man, there's no question about that, whose life's work is to take away software freedom from people, that's their sole purpose in life.
I do actually agree with you what you said before, which was that his sole purpose was to make profit.
Yeah.
Nobody's sole purpose is any one thing. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't...
My sole purpose is universal software freedom. What are you talking about?
You can't, you know, just caricature somebody like
I'm a caricature, baby. Yes, I'm a caricature of myself. That's awesome. Anyway, sorry, you were saying. I made you laugh too much now, and you can't even make your point.
I don't even
That was a debate strategy. I made you laugh.
I didn't think we were debating. I thought we were discussing.
Okay. Anyway, you don't remember what your point was because I declared myself a character of myself.
Well, I was saying that it's unfair to characterize Steve Jobs in one way, and I was chiding myself actually for saying that his sole purpose was to make profit. But I mean, I think holding him up as a looking at him as a businessman and seeking profit is probably more apt than the drive behind taking away users' freedom was to maximize profit in every possible way. But I wouldn't say that his goal was to...
Yes, his goal was to make money, and he figured out the best way he could make money was taking away software freedom from users.
Well, not just software freedom.
Oh, yeah, other types of freedom as well.
Yeah.
I mean, hardware, the freedom... I mean, the hardware people hate the Mac stuff, too, because you can't change components and modify it. I mean, so people who are
into
hardware...
And then there were all the deals with the media industries.
Yeah. So. Exactly. And so I don't know what happens to Apple next. I hope that Apple does not have the kind of successes it's had in the past, because it is an adversary to software freedom. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's, I guess you could argue maybe the policies might change. Maybe Apple become a little softer and that might help. I don't know. I'll be curious to see if
I wouldn't necessarily. Yeah. I mean, I think it's just, I wouldn't say it is softer, seek a different kind of success, right? Because big companies can be successful with free software. Companies especially, like Apple, that create, such beautiful hardware are exactly the kinds of companies that could be very successful with free software.
Okay.
So if Apple wants to switch over to GNOME 3, I would be very happy to talk to them.
I'll take the over on 150 years in that.
Yeah.
I think Apple will cease to exist as a company before they will switch to primarily a free software system.
No, I think that's right. But what I'm saying is that
certainly exactly, one under the GPL.
I'm with you. I think that in fact, Apple is the one of the kinds of models that could succeed were it free software.
Yeah, and that's what Canonical's trying to do, but they don't want to use GNOME 3. So what's that about? I'm sorry. I won't bring that up.
This is a totally different podcast. Yeah.
It's this Oddcast, just totally different episode.
Totally different episode of this Oddcast.
Correct. And we've debated Unity before, so.
Have we?
Maybe we haven't.
I don't think. I don't know if there's that much to debate.
Okay.
But, okay.
You never want to debate anything.
I like to discuss rather than debate. Okay. But then I think I wind up debating anyway. We do disagree about some things.
Oh, do you know Andy Rooney quit? Did you hear this?
No.
Okay. And it's the only impression I can do. And most of our listeners don't even know who Andy Rooney is. They're like, why is Bradley talking about this Andy Rooney
guy? I have actually temporarily forgotten who Andy Rooney is.
He's the guy at the end of 60 Minutes who used to give the little thing, and he's did his last one. And he's the only person I can do an impression of.
Okay, well, sometimes we do a funny segment. Maybe I'll ask you to do an impression for the funny.
No, I have to retire because he's retired. So
well, you can give a retirement speech.
Now his retirement speech was not as Andy Rooney enough. He said in the interview he didn't mellow in his old age. Anyway, so I thought I should mention that because Andy Rooney was the first person I ever remember seeing on television. So there's that.
Oh really?
And now he's retired, which means I'm old too. I'm not as old as him. He's 93, but
I'm not. He's
93. 93.
Wow.
He was. I don't want to talk anymore about Andy because I don't actually
Andy Rooney. Another part of the problem with this format for the podcast is that especially if we haven't seen each other in a while, this is like we're just chatting.
Did you ever notice how our podcast sort of doesn't stay together at the end? See, nobody knows who Andy Rooney is, so it's not even funny to anybody.
Yeah.
Okay, that's it. We're done.
See ya.
So, Karen, we were somewhat forced, in a way, to record an update to this, which is why the audio quality of this segment is bad and why we said in the last segment we were going to end, and now we're not.
Right. And I'm actually at the Montreal Summit for GNOME right now, so I'm on my mobile phone.
Well, we apologize to everyone for the audio quality, but we felt that given that we recorded last week, and then the free software internet exploded with discussions of Steve Jobs' death and RMS's comments on it and various other things. We felt like we should record a brief update to the material we had recorded earlier just to make sure that folks realize we weren't ignoring that in fact it was recorded after all that started.
Yeah, and I think that actually the explosion over the statements capture a lot of the discomfort around the line that you and I were walking in what we already recorded.
Yeah, I sort of stand by what I said in the main segments that folks just listened to. I don't think it's any different if somebody died yesterday or died 20 years ago or 100 years ago. And I agree with what you said, which is that basically a time of someone's death is a time to look over their whole life and say what happened and what was good, bad, or indifferent. And I think that that's a reasonable thing to do.
Well, and a public figure is a public figure. I mean, somebody who holds themselves out, you know, it's different when someone's a private person and they, you know, they live their life quietly. But when someone holds themselves out as a public figure, as Steve Jobs did, giving a lot of, you know, talks to big rooms of people and cultivating, you know, a public persona, then I feel like it's part and parcel of the whole thing that folks should think critically. But I do agree with a lot of the criticism you know, that's going on right now, and that it's really important when somebody dies to be tactful about it. I think it's a sensitive time and people feel strongly about it, and there are respectful ways to talk about things and disrespectful ways to talk about things. And I think that, you know, this is one of those situations where I don't know. I agree with a lot of the criticism of of Richard Stallman in this instance, because I think that, you know, I actually think he anticipated that he was treading in troublesome territory, because he states, you know, I'm not I forget what he said exactly, since I'm on the road. Do you remember?
I don't necessarily think we need to read it exactly. But I don't really, knowing RMS, I don't really agree with you. I think that he doesn't tend to, first of all, RMS is not known for his tact. I read a commenter online pointing out that, in fact, being not tactful is actually sometimes a very important attribute for someone fighting for a social justice cause, because they're willing to say what no one else will say. And RMS has always had an emperor has no clothes kind of style to him.
Well, the point I was trying to make is that he went as far as to say, I'm not glad that he's dead. And, you know, I think that that's where other people maybe would have been a little bit more effusive.
Yeah. Well, he said nobody deserves to die is actually what he said.
Oh, okay. Which I think was sort of trying to get at this point, and then he goes on to the point he wanted to make, which is that, you know, the points that you were making mostly, and, you know, I was agreeing with in part in the previous segment.
Yeah. So I think one of the things I'm going to do is also link in the show notes to the Gawker article and the New York Times article. The Gawker article about Steve Jobs was very critical, pointing they were primarily focused on the sourcing of various Apple devices in various different countries. Basically, I think there was a line in there about how Apple products were built on the backs of mistreated Chinese workers who work in these electronics factories. And so I think that RMS wasn't the only one who was criticizing Steve Jobs and saying that his life wasn't perfect. I watched this morning, because we're now recording on Sunday, the Sunday morning news, CBS News piece recorded by David Pogue, who just sort of has this glowing, wonderful, how great is Steve Jobs was so great, and he used to call me, and all this stuff. And I just thought about how corrupt the tech press is, that they, basically, David Pogue has made his career of getting free devices to play with, and he reviews them well, and then that means he gets more. And it's just so corrupt, the way that whole tech press works, with regard to getting, basically you get to play with new toys if you say good things about them, and if you don't, you won't get the free ones in the future. So,
I just think the situation's more nuanced than that. I mean, like, you know, even, you know, Colbert had a little segment on that, the Colbert Report.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, and, you know, it's more nuanced than that, because the point is that everybody wanted those devices, that there was, you know...
Not everybody. I didn't want to have my computer controlled by other people and not be allowed to even learn how it works.
I often wanted a device, but I wanted a free version. A lot of that stuff was really, really sexy, and that's part of what made it so influential and what made it so important, you know, and all the more important to point out, you know, what was bad about those devices and what should have been better.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I agree. I think getting back to our initial point, this is the time to you know, or a time to talk about, you know, Apple and Steve Jobs retrospectively. But I do think that the issue is more nuanced, and I think that in a situation like this where you're talking about somebody's death, I think tact is important.
Yeah, and RMS does not. And I know him well enough to know that he doesn't think tact is important. And to the extent to which people say that his message might have been lost because he wasn't tactful, maybe that's true. But there are a lot of RMS's messages that would never have been delivered if he wasn't tactful. And I think there's been some good comments about that. A fellow I know from way back named Craig Insidiker told the story of RMS in Argentina and basically saying to the Argentine government, you are failing to do something in a truly free software way because you're rolling out free software, but it's dual boot and all this other things, which is a very non-tactful thing to say when you've been invited by a government to come speak to them about what they think to basically herald the greatness of their partial adoption of free software. So I think that some of what we as a community like about RMS, and I'm speaking more generally, that he's willing to say to people, I think this is wrong and here's why, I think that's what leads to this kind of thing. And I have some of that myself, and I'm actually curious to see how people are going to react to some of the things I said in the earlier segments. I've been wondering that ever since the RMS stuff broke. Of course, we had already recorded our two segments that preceded this one, and I was sitting thinking, what are people going to say about what I've said? And I'm curious to see.
I know, I thought the same thing about myself, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, and I was somewhere in between your level of tact, which I agree with you completely. You're a very tactful person, one of the most tactful people I know, and RMS is probably one of the least tactful people I know, certainly true, and I'm somewhere in between, so I'm just curious. I'm curious how untactful you can be in this world and not get flamed to ad nauseum.
Yeah, I mean, and at the same time, I agree with you. I mean, I think that sometimes Salman carries the messages that no one else, you know, is willing to carry. And, you know, I always say about Richard that he's, you know, that when he has a strong opinion about something, he's almost always right. But carrying the message and, you know, whatever wrapping you make your message means that people are either receptive to it or they're not. And, you know, this is where I think actually we need to be more banded as a free software community to, you know, to help convey the parts of the message that are, you know, are reasonable or the meat of the message is basically what I'm saying. Like the main point of the message is one that I think, you know, most of us agree with. And actually, in one of the posts, I read a link. There was a link to, I can't even remember. I think it was Michel Gagnier's post. Basically saying that that post was a much better description of the issues, and it was simply, it was a very, very eloquent, you know, a very, very eloquent exposition of the very same idea. And it's just, you know, it's asking a lot for everyone to be that that tactful and well-written all of the time. But I agree with the criticism because I really wish that message had been wrapped up a little bit nicer.
Yeah, I mean, the final thing that really bothered me about all this is that RMS was careful to post it on Stallman.org, which is his personal website, and it wasn't an official message from the FSF. And it's true that RMS is the president of the FSF and the chairman of its board, but I'm also on the board of directors of the FSF, and I say lots of things on my personal website, some of which agree with official FSF policy. Actually, I almost always am in agreement with it, but sometimes I'm not, and I say when I'm not. And I think it's somewhat unfair for folks to be unwilling to look at that nuance of the question. I think that just because somebody is a head of an organization, they should have a right to their personal opinions. And, for example, I'm not bringing up some of the things.
But he didn't actually explicitly say that, and I think it's unreasonable for someone who is a head of an organization. I think it's unreasonable when somebody's affiliated with an organization not to hold, you know, not to link those two things. I mean, you know, whenever I say things, I you know, I think about the fact that maybe they'll be attributed to GNOME, or maybe they'll be even attributed to SFLC or even Conservancy, and that has happened in the past.
Sure, it happens. I think it's wrong, though.
It's nice to think that you're not in part speaking for the organization. I mean, usually when you're speaking, you know, like, for example, I heard you on the panel at the Copyright Assignment panel at the Desktop Summit, and, you know, you were very clear when your views, you know, were different than organizations you were affiliated with to say so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and basically that fastidiousness that I've developed with regard to that issue has been because people have made assumption and confusions, and it's caused serious trouble in my life when they have done so, when they've read something on ebb.org and basically tried to get me in trouble at my job for it and all sorts of things, and went to my employers and said that this person on ebb.org is saying something on your behalf, which is completely an asinine position to take. So I've lived through that, and that's caused me to be fastidious about this. But I think it's
unreasonable to think that you won't be associated with, you know, that the statement won't be associated with your employer.
Well, I have been called an unreasonable person, and suppose I am an unreasonable person on this point. But so, for example, I didn't talk about anything that was in, for example, in the Gawker article about Steve Jobs, about his non-public life. So there's stuff in that Gawker article about his relationship with his family and his divorced wife. I'm going to link to them in the show notes. I'm not going to repeat them here because my whole point was I didn't want to get into those because that's his private life, and I think that's crossing the line of the distinction between what you're saying, which is somebody who's a public figure, we have a right to sort of analyze and talk about what they've done. But that doesn't mean we have a right to their private lives and talk about what they've said in their private lives and done in their private lives. So I think that was unfair of the Gawker article, and people aren't giving that a hard time. There's also people who are planning to protest at Steve Jobs' funeral, saying he's a soulless minion or something like that.
Oh my gosh, really?
That same church that protests everybody's funeral. It's my wife says we shouldn't even mention them because it gives them what they want, which is credibility and name. But I'm not even gonna say the name of the church or anything. But there are people that are doing that because this was mentioned in some of the comments, and it's like nobody's giving outrage to that. I mean, that's truly outrageous and truly wrong.
Well, hang on. I'm sure there are people who are expressing outrage at it, just not necessarily.
Yeah, but not in our community. Everybody in our community. There's one person in our community who brought it up, which is how I learned about it even happening, and everybody else is worried, you know, three sentences that RMS put on his website saying nobody deserves to die, but what Steve Jobs did was wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody, you know, nobody expressed surprise that that Salman had the view that he had, you know, about Jobs, but I think he didn't, you know, I think that when someone dies, it is a time for delicacy. So, you know, I'm on the fence about it. I mean,
I'm such a computer geek. You know, I think of this by induction, and it really bothers me that things are not, that this is not true by induction, right? Because somehow at N plus, you know, N plus G days after someone dies, where G is very small, there are certain rules you have to follow, and then suddenly it's not too soon, which is sort of my point about Edison earlier in the earlier segments, is that, like, it's been you know, 150, 200 years, something like that. I'm sounding stupid because I don't know what date Edison died, but the point is he's been dead a very long time, so we can say pretty much anything we want about him. But because the G is small in N plus G for Steve Jobs, we have to have this certain amount of tact, and as a programmer and somebody who believes in proof by induction, it seems weird to me that somehow it's somehow asymptotic that you can say things later that you couldn't say then.
Well, I mean, there's no hard line on people's emotions.
Yeah,
I mean, that's,
you're right.
That's the thing. There's no formula that you can follow, and, you know, for whatever, for the multitude of reasons that we've been hearing about, Steve Jobs' death really impacted a lot of people, and they feel very personally about it. And so, you know, there's a way to talk respectfully about it and a way to talk disrespectfully about it. And I think, you know,
my issue is those rules change when N gets large, when it's been a longer time since they were dead.
That's true, but there's no bright line.
Right, and that's annoying that nobody wants to write down. Like, when can I say, when does it become untactful? Like, nobody can even tell me when it becomes untactful. I'm supposed to somehow figure that out by social cues. And for those of us who are geeks who are not great at social cues, we're at a disadvantage. And some people could say, well, that's your lot in life. But I don't know. It kind of sucks.
Well, there are general rules that you can that you can put into place, which is, you know, for at least... For a random period, and we could pick, you know, anything from a month to 6 months after someone has died, it's really important to be extra cautious about what you say about them, or really just how you say it is the most important thing. And the truth is, if you say it tactfully, you can say it, you know, at N, forget about N plus one or N plus, you know, 365.
Okay, well, I'm excited in a weird way to find out how tactful I am, because we'll see how those first two segments we recorded, if people think I was tactful or not, and I can figure out how bad or good I am at it.
I too wonder how tactful I was.
Well, I mean, as I said, you're one of the most tactful people I know, so I don't think you have anything to worry about. Maybe I do. I don't know. We'll find out, I suppose. And I hope folks have enjoyed this. I hope this update was useful to folks. I know the audio quality wasn't great, but we figured it was better to get this together. And I just want to say one final thing, which is thank you so much to Dan Lynch, our intrepid producer, who had already edited the show and was willing to splice this in for us. It may not be spliced in perfectly. We told him to make it as easy for himself as possible because he had already done all the work. And so we want to thank him for making the effort to splice this extra piece in.
He is definitely the best. I think we should end on that.
We'll probably end up with a segment next week for at least a few minutes discussing what people responded to this episode. So we'll catch up with folks then.
Free as in Freedom is produced by Dan Lynch of HalfBakedMedia.com. Thanks to Mike Tarantino for our theme music. Free as in Freedom is licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 United States license. Please send any feedback to ogcast@faif.us and subscribe to the RSS feed on faif.us.
Well, if you'll just excuse me.
Hey, you can't have my shiny thing. I found it. It's my shiny thing.
What are you driveling about?
This is my shiny thing. And if you try and take it off me, I may have to eat you.